Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Plain and simple, we'd like President Bartlett to aggressively support legislation that would make it mandatory for every public school in America to teach geography using the Peters projection map instead of the traditional Mercator.
Give me $200 and it's done.
Really?
No. Why are we changing maps?
Because, CJ, the Mercator projection has fostered European imperialist attitudes for centuries and created an ethnic bias against the Third World.
Really?
The German cartographer, Mercator, originally designed this map in 1569 as a navigational tool for European sailors.
The map enlarges areas at the poles to create straight lines of constant bearing or geographic direction.
So it makes it easier to cross an ocean.
But
yes,
it distorts the relative size of nations and continents.
Are you saying the map is wrong?
Oh, dear, yes. Look at Greenland.
Okay.
Now look at Africa.
Okay.
The two land masses appear to be roughly the same size.
Yes.
Would it blow your mind if I told you that Africa is in reality 14 times larger?
Yes.
Here we have Europe drawn considerably larger than South America. When it's 6.9 million square miles, South America is almost double the size of Europe's 3.8 million.
Alaska appears three times as large as Mexico, when Mexico is larger by 0.1 million square miles.
Germany appears in the middle of the map when it's in the northernmost quarter of the Earth.
Wait. Relative size is one thing, but you're telling me that Germany isn't where we think it is?
Nothing's where you think it is.
Where is it?
I'm glad you asked. The Peters projection.
It has fidelity of axis.
Fidelity of position.
East-west lines are parallel and intersect north-south axes at right angles.
What the hell is that?
It's where you've been living this whole time. When third world countries are misrepresented, they're likely to be valued less. When Mercator maps exaggerate the importance of Western civilization, when the top of the map is given to the northern hemisphere and the bottom is given to the southern, then people will tend to adopt top and bottom attitudes.
But wait, where else could you put the northern hemisphere but on the top?
On the bottom.
How?
Like this.
Yeah, but you can't do that.
Why not?
Because it's freaking me out.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. If Mike says he's growing a pear, he's literally growing a pear. What did you think he meant? Get your minds out of the irrigation ditch. Here he is, Mike Novak.
One more time. Well, looky here on a Sunday morning in September, and it still is September. We haven't lost that. Sitting opposite from me in the studio, fussing with his headsets. You got a problem there, dude?
I can't hear anything from him. I don't know if I'm supposed to.
Are they plugged in first? Would help.
They're plugged in.
No. Follow the plug. Let's see. Where does it go? They're plugged in somewhere over there. All right. And then probably if it's in a box there at the end, you just need to turn that. All right, and I think Denny is coming. I saw him jump out of his seat. Let's make sure they have some volume there, Denny. We're not sure. And that man you heard speaking just now was Mr. Brown Thumb himself, who is back in the studio after a while. Is that working at all there, Dan? What? You're looking at me. Is it this? Oh, why am I controlling it here? I don't want to control it. Is it this one? Oh, well, there you go. See, just hit that button. Got to let me know that these things are going on. I've never had that control before, but now I do. All right. Is that better? No? Okay. So we have no heads. Don't worry about it for the moment, Mr. BT, because until we get phone calls. And by the way, let me just let folks know that 773-763-9278 is our phone number. We have Carol. The lovely Carol.
Yes, good morning.
In the booth, and you're the only Mouseketeer here today.
I am. Well, I see a mini Mouseketeer.
Yeah, well, that's Isaiah, who is a...
My groupie.
Is he your groupie? Hey, say hi, Isaiah.
Hi.
And he's one of your helpers, huh?
Yeah, it's my oldest nephew, and he's been... I kind of take him around with me sometimes to different gardening-related things so he can get exposed to them. So when he grows up, he remembers that... You know, the garden show, or we went to a garden talk, or we're on the radio.
You need points of reference, huh?
Yeah.
Is that working at all? No.
I think so. And, well, maybe we can talk about it when we talk about more about seed saving or why I save seeds.
Yeah.
But I think maybe I would have, had my come to gardening moment a lot younger in life. I didn't realize until he was practically dead, but my grandfather was a farmer. And so... He never spoke to us about farming or gardening or anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I think maybe...
That's got to be a weird thing to find out towards the end of his life.
Yeah. Well, you know, we didn't grow up in... We didn't live in the same states. He came over for vacations and things, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that I kind of want to teach him about now while they're younger.
And that's something that you've gotten involved in. Folks, I was giving out the phone number, 773-763-9278, because Mr. Brown Thumb is here today. And this is the right time of year to talk about seed saving.
Seed saving.
That's kind of a niche you've carved out for yourself in the horticultural world, not only as blogger, but as blogger who saves seeds. And you do a lot of how-tos, including YouTube videos. You give all your handles, and it's at Mr. Brown Thumb.
Well, basically, yeah. If you Google Mr. Brown Thumb, you'll come across my blogs, and you come across my main gardening blog where I have my just garden journal, and then like you said, there's videos and posts about how to save seeds or how to start seeds, and a lot of other general gardening stuff. But lately, the past few years, I've really been focusing a lot on seeds because I had one of those revelations after my grandfather died that. He took with him a lot of knowledge that would have been helpful to somebody like me or helpful to other people out there. So I kind of try to document everything and put it into blog form so that it's there forever, you know what I mean?
And you do things that a lot of people don't, which is save the seeds. Right. I mean, a lot of folks claim they're going to do it and say, oh, that's such a good idea. And then if they're like me, they just never get around to it. You know, you're out there doing it and then documenting how it's done so that you can bring them back. And what we'll talk about in a sec, well, we'll start with the most obvious, which is tomato seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I grew some fabulous tomatoes this year. I want them back next year. And I don't necessarily want to pay for them because they were heirloom varieties. And we can talk about the difference there, too, between heirlooms and
hybrids.
And hybrids. 773-763-9278 if you've got any questions for Mr. Brown Thumb. And yeah, who knows where the discussion will go.
Well, one of the things that I want to talk about was that later on in the 10 o'clock hour, you have the, what's his name?
George Genoviak, or sometimes Genowick is how they other folks pronounce it. He's the giant pumpkin guy. We've got the Illinois Giant Pumpkin
yes.
Growers Association.
I'm excited about this.
Today is their way off. At Bankston's Farm. It's actually Bankson's. It's hard to pronounce. Bankson's Farm out in Homer Glen, Illinois. And that starts at noon. You can go to my website and find information if you don't know where that is. But they have a Facebook page and everything. And George, he shot me a message the other day and said, hey, the big way off is
today, and they're expecting a pumpkin that might be as big as 1,500 pounds. Wow. Which, and you have pumpkin envy.
I do. I've always wanted to grow giant pumpkins. Like, it's been one of my dreams. I've wanted a farm, and it's gone from, like, a big farm situation, farm fantasy, where I have a big farm just for giant pumpkins, to maybe just taking over a few empty lots in Chicago and
growing giant pumpkins. You realize, it becomes an obsession.
You know what? Have you seen the documentary on PBS?
No.
Lords of the Gourds, The Pursuit of Excellence. It comes out, like, in October-ish. I think it's on Netflix already, but I know, like, October they start playing it. And it's an awesome documentary about how obsessive these people get growing their giant pumpkins.
Well, I've known some of them, like Ken Benson, my buddy from Triton College, did this for a while, and he was growing them in the 600 to 800 pound range. The pros, well, the world record was set last year on the East Coast, and the guy grew a pumpkin over 2,000 pounds, a ton of pumpkin. How do you do that? That's just crazy.
Steroids.
Well, you know what it is. You know what Ken told me: manure, and you got to get started early. And they do. They have these little heated tents where they have the grow lights. You know, you get that thing germinating early. You want it to grow as much as possible, and then you pray that you don't have a disaster, like some kind of disease or an animal or vandalism or whatever can happen. In fact, I might ask George, and he's going to be on at 10:45 this morning. Ask George what kind of things he's run into that will destroy a pumpkin. He said, personally, he told me yesterday, we were chatting, he said he didn't have a great year for pumpkins. And I said, well, was it a good pumpkin growing year? He said, yeah, it was a good pumpkin growing year. I personally just didn't happen to have the good luck to make that work. So, and it does require some luck. It's skill and luck and magic, I guess, too. So, 10:45, George Janowiak, or Janowiak, as they say in America, will be here with giant pumpkins. And then, to start the 10 o'clock hour, Deborah C. Stone is the Chief Sustainability Officer and Director of the Cook County Department of Environmental Control. Now, you might not even have ever heard of them. And I found out recently, within the past couple of weeks, that fly dumping in Cook County outside of Chicago is a problem, as is regulating recycling facilities. I had no idea. Deborah and I met on the Down in the Dumps tour on the south side, the Southeast Environmental Task Force, when we went to visit the dumps. Have you ever been on the Down in the Dumps tour, Ramon?
I think I live down the street from the dumps.
So you're on the south side.
I live on the southwest side, yeah. There's plenty of dumps.
Well, they're southeast side, okay.
Well, you know, we used to have a big problem like that with, like, fly dumping. When I was a kid, I mean, when you're a kid, it's, like, awesome because you can make a fort out of washing machines and refrigerators and things. But once you get a little bit older, you realize, like, exactly how toxic this practice is when you're doing it into communities that don't have resources
to regulate it, to clean it up. And apparently, and I didn't realize this, apparently it's a problem in parts of Cook County that are not in the city of Chicago and not, in some municipalities. So it's basically suburban Cook County has these issues. And Deborah C. Stone will be here in the 10 o'clock hour to talk about that. I see that the and this is something that I don't know if you're aware of, that the debate is heating up about the Ileana Tollway, which Governor Quinn, and I don't even know who the governor of Indiana is right now. I should know that. That's embarrassing.
anybody on Twitter can Google it
They'll let me know.
Right now.
Somebody will bust me on that. But they're all gung-ho for the Ileana Tollway. And a bunch of environmental groups are not so hot on that project. For one thing, it looks like it's going to be a boondoggle. See, this is the thing. Okay. I went to this award ceremony. We talked about it last week. Carol, you were here, and we talked about the award ceremony for the Illinois Environmental Council, and Governor Quinn was there, and he got this big standing O because he's Mr. Environmental Governor. And I will cop to it and say I was one of the people who did not stand up. And that's because I've got my issues with him. And this is one of them, the Ileana Tollway. Why the, you know, and I'm sure I know what he's doing. He's going jobs, jobs, jobs. And I'm saying, you know, jobs come, jobs go. The environment goes, it's gone. Jobs, yeah, you can make jobs out of other things. Once you destroy this land, once you compromise it, you don't get it back. And that's my issue with that, plain and simple. And there are other groups like Open Lands that agree with me and Illinois Sierra Club and other folks who would rather not see the Ileana Tollway built. So I guess we're going to have to continue to be involved in that because the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning is going to have their report. I guess it's going to be considered, their report is going to be considered on October 9th. And looking at this article in the Sun Times that came out a few hours ago, raises doubts about whether the envisioned toll road would make financial sense. And that's the other thing. The numbers seem to be cooked. Those numbers are cooked. That's not going to be that cheap. It's going to cost a lot of money. And who's going to pay for it? I know. I'm sitting here, Mr. Taxpayer, and I'm going to pay for it. Anyway, so it looks like I have to cover that again, too. And before we, one more thing, Mr. BT, before we get to your seed savers, I do want to call attention to garden keepers. You're familiar with garden keepers.
Mm-hmm.
And Julie Samuels and Elvia Ochoa Rodriguez.
Yeah.
At Open Lands are behind this. They've got a, if you want to grow food in your own community, you want to put a community garden together, you can take this class called Garden Keepers, and it starts on October 12th and runs 6 weeks and not that expensive. I think I've got the, it's $75 per person. They want two people from each garden, which makes sense. If you're doing a community garden, you don't want just one person there. You want to spread that wealth of information. And each person is $75. And it's really reasonable for a six-week course. And you're going to learn a ton of stuff and get a ton of help for this. If you're interested in the registration, you can go to openlands.org. And just type in garden keepers, and it'll take you to all that information. The class on the 12th is getting started. It's about allotment, garden history, and basics. 10-19, creating a sustainable organization. And that's you know this, Mr. Brown Thumb, that a lot of gardening is the sustainability part comes from who can you get to show up week after week. I know you've probably been down that road, haven't you?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to have a sustainable community garden, I guess, when the community doesn't want to help sustain it, or even when the membership doesn't show up for like work days and things like that, because then people start cutting corners or they start looking for the easy way, you know?
Yep.
You know,
I'm going to water this, but not that.
I'm going to, and like, if you can't get people to show up to help you pull weeds, and all of a sudden people are like, well, maybe we should just round up because it's easier. You know, I can't get 10 people
to
show up.
Have you really had that conversation?
I'm not going to name names. Oh. I'm not going to name names or anything, but there have been some conversations where it's like, well, you know, I can't get people to show up to help me pull weeds or bind weed, you know? So, and it's like, maybe we should just round up the whole thing. And then there's like the big discussion whether, oh, should we use chemicals or not? And then it's like, well, no, we're organic. And well, nobody out there wants to do the organic practices, you know? They don't want to show up for them.
I'll tell you what, in our garden, they go to me because I'm the master gardener. And sometimes it's a pain because you're out in the garden and all you hear is, could you show me, Michael? And it drives you crazy. On the other hand, nobody's ever mentioned chemicals because they know if they do, I'll whoop them upside the head. It ain't going to happen. And we've got a ton of bindweed. And I say, dig out as much as you can. Just work it as hard as you can. It's sort of
life in the garden, you know, and I'm not overly concerned with that, because I refuse to use synthetic chemicals. We've used a couple of organic products, and we may do that again. We had some issues with powdery mildew this year, so, you know, I understand that. But Roundup, not going to be used in our garden.
KC Tomato on Twitter wants us to know that Mike Pence is the Indiana governor. Hope that's
okay. Oh, thank you. See, KC Tomato. Let's do a shout out to KC Tomato. Thank you, Mike Pence. Because I was thinking Mitch Daniels, and went, no, that was a while ago. Yeah, okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. See, we've got our listeners who are, and you're right. I'm looking at my Twitter feed here. By the way, go back to Garden Keepers. Go to openlands.org. Look for Garden Keepers. You can sign up. It's a great program. I hope you take advantage of it. They have spaces open right now, and it starts on October 12th, goes through November 16th. You know, one class a week. I believe they're on Saturdays. So take advantage of that, and I hope you do. Okay, Mr. Brown Thumb.
Yes.
Tomatoes. How do you save us? I've got a bunch of tomatoes in my backyard from the community garden, actually, that turned out really great. And the tomatoes themselves, there's always a few you lose. Some of them hit the ground and the ants got to them, and I went, oh, okay, well, I'll tell you what, I'll save this for seed. So what should I be doing with a tomato that I'm saving for seed?
Well, the first thing you want to do is you want to cut the tomato across the equator, which is across, like, the center of the tomato.
So the place with the little green thing is on the we're listening to the Mercator projection at the top
exactly.
of the show. All right, with the globe. So the North Pole is where the green thing is, where the tomato was connected to the vine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the South Pole would be where the flower or the blossom
was. The blossom end rod is.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly. And then you cut midway.
You want to cut across the equator midway because it's the easiest way to get out the seeds.
Okay.
And you could also save the fruits this way. So if you want to do like sauce or canning, you can still use it that way. But the easiest way is just to scoop out the seeds, set them on a plate, and let them dry. That's the easiest way to do it. Or wash them, set them out to dry.
Then why would you do it any other way? That sounds pretty easy.
Well, if you do the fermentation method, which is to scoop out like all the gunk inside of the tomato and all the gooey stuff in the seeds and put them like in a cup in a warm location and cover them for a couple of days and let the mold form.
You'll get fruit flies.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, if you cover it, you won't get fruit flies, but you'll get a nice little layer of really disgusting mold and maybe a little bit of a smell. But the fermentation process helps break down the coating that's around the seed that keeps it from germinating.
Oh.
And you also kills off some diseases and some problems you can carry in the seeds, because you can carry disease in the seed. So it can
kill
off
like
mold light.
But if you mold it, it goes away?
Yeah.
You can defeat that?
Yeah. With the fermentation process.
Explain the simple way again is just take the seeds out, put them out to dry, and then
rinse them off, put them on a paper plate or a piece of newspaper or something like
that.
Yeah. I don't know if Diane Wheely, is that your
person? Yeah, Diane Ott Wheely.
Yeah, yeah. From Seed Savers Exchange. She, I think in the book, she has a story of how one of the first tomato seeds that the group got came in somebody had just let it dry on a piece of newspaper and mailed it to them. So, it's very easy. You can just pull out the seeds, dry them out, and then you've saved tomato seeds. But if you want to get more technical, like KC Tomato, he's a tomato breeder. I'm not sure how familiar you are with him. But
I know that he follows the show. I actually know whether he's... And I know you're tweeting him right now, even as you've got to look over. Mr. Brown Thumb's looking down at it. See, this is his life. He's on Twitter and Facebook and... all over the non-traditional media. This is old school media, radio here, where I try to look him in the eye, but I can't because he's looking down at his device. Yeah, I know KC Tomato because he follows the show, and what's interesting with the people who tweet and follow the show, I don't know whether they're actually listening to the radio or they're just following the Twitter feed. Yeah, and you just tweeted thanks back to him. So there you go, 19 seconds ago. So he's a tomato breeder? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's a tomato breeder. He's got a lot of interesting varieties that he's developed or that he's working on. But he's a big proponent of the fermentation process. And I like it, too, just because it's gross and disgusting. And
and you like gross and disgusting things?
In the garden, sometimes you need things to keep things interesting. You need things to, bring people's interest. And if I show,
like Isaiah,
yeah, if I show him, you know, a bunch of seeds in a cup, he won't probably think anything of it. But if I show him a cup that's molded over, he'll be like, "Oh, that's disgusting and gross." He loves digging around for bugs in the garden.
Yeah, Isaiah, tell me about bugs. Digging for bugs.
They're cool. Disgusting.
Oh, I love bugs. What's your favorite bug?
Garden snails.
Garden snails. You know, that is cool because I don't see snails that often. You see snails sometimes, but more slugs, worms. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I saw your post with the tomato worms. Mm-hmm. And when the parasitic wasps get them and they have the eggs. We had one of those in the garden, not last year, but I think the year before. And we took a photo of it. That's pretty cool, too, isn't it? When you attack the tomato worm. Did you like that, Isaiah? Have you ever seen one of those?
No.
You didn't see the worm that's in the jar in the back in the porch with the white cocoons on it? Oh, I must have showed it to Carmine, my other nephew.
You got too many nephews there.
I only have two, so
what
that I know of. No.
All right, so that is one way to do the tomato thing. Again, so explain again one more time for those people listening and kind of caught it, if you want to do the fermentation process.
If you want to do the fermentation process, you can cut the tomato across the equator, scoop out your seeds, put them in a cup or a jar, maybe cover them. If it has a lid, it's perfect. If it doesn't, you can use like saran wrap or something like that, just cover it. Then you want to put it in a location that's warm, because humidity is what starts off the molding process. So mm-hmm. if it's like you leave it outside and the temperatures dip at night, it's probably not going to work. But you set them aside.
So you're thinking indoors rather than outdoors, yeah.
This time of year. If it was middle of summer, you could probably get away with doing it outside. But not this time of year. You want to put it somewhere nice and warm, and then in about 2 days, you'll see the layer of mold start to form at the top.
What color will it be?
White, gray, and then it can get pretty black, can get pretty gnarly looking.
Okay, all right.
And after two days, you'll see the mold develop. And once you see the mold has developed, then you can just rinse out the seeds, dump out the floaties, which are the ones that usually float, the seeds that float near the top. And because we dump those out because those seeds are not going to be viable. They're not going to germinate. I think there's no embryo in them.
Oh.
So you can dump
and
out
you can
anything
tell just because they float.
Mm-hmm. You can dump out the floaties and then just rinse out the ones that stay at the bottom. And you don't even have to, you can do it in the same jar or cup that you're doing it. Just fill it and let it spill over and keep rinsing them out that way. It's easy.
Cool. See, now you folks have learned how to save your tomato seeds. All right. I need to take a short break here. Think about other seeds that folks might want to get a hold of at this time of year. And if there's, and one of the things we should probably address is harvesting seeds in natural areas, which have issues.
Right.
Because you can't just walk into a forest preserve or a...
You're not supposed to.
All right. And people do. Right. Exactly. And maybe we can talk about that a little bit. That's Mr. Brown Thumb. You can find him on Twitter at Mr. Brown Thumb. What a surprise. And other places also on Facebook at Mr. Brown Thumb. You've got that nailed, right?
That's pretty much. Every time a new social network comes out, I always go on there and register the name just in case it takes off.
Even if you don't use it.
Even if I don't use it,
That's a great idea. See, that's how dumb I am. I got to get one of those because...
Well, the funny thing is that when I was posting about being on your show this morning, there's another Mike Novak, but he's like a wrestler promoter or like a wrestler personality
what?
Or something. Yeah, and his page comes up above yours.
No.
I'm serious.
Where?
And we're on Facebook. And we're friends on Facebook, so I figured, you know...
That's not true. That can't possibly be true. Really?
Yeah, I'll show you. I'll show you a screen grab. I'll go home and I'll do it again so you can
Darn
see
it. All right. We got to take him out. All right. It's the Mike Novak Show. And if you put in the Mike Novak Show, I guarantee you won't get anything but my... show. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. We're entering fall, and as we talked about last week, it's a great time to plant trees once they're in the ground. Here are some considerations. Stake your tree only if it feels wobbly following planting. Research has shown that allowing the tree to flex slightly will help establish the tree. Conserve soil moisture by mulching your new tree to a diameter of a foot or so wider than the original ball container.
Do not pile the mulch up around the base of the tree. We always call that volcano mulch. Water to thoroughly soak the root ball and check frequently to make sure the root ball is not drying out. You only get to plant a tree once. Keep that in mind. Taking extra time to select the proper tree, prepare the planting site, planting properly and providing good follow-up care will do the most to give your tree the best chance of success. To find out more, contact a certified arborist at The Care of Trees. Call 800-508-9466. Do it right now. 800-508-9466 for a free consultation or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
We just got a tweet, Ramon, from Natural Awakenings, Chicago, who says, yes, the fermentation method works great to save tomato seeds. Thanks for sharing. So, cool. Bertolt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village reminds you that the beautiful season of autumn is upon us. Fall is a great time for planting and to have some fun decorating. At Bertolt's, you'll find a nice assortment of mums, pansies, accent plants, plus a variety of pumpkins, unique gourds, corn stalks, and straw. And if you look near the entrance of Bertolt's, you'll find an assortment of flagstone, outcropping, wallstone, and granite cobbles. The bulk materials yard is stocked with topsoil, compost, mulch, sand, gravel, and limestone screening, ready for pickup or delivery, not to mention firewood, straw, and sod, in stock seasonally. The staff will be happy to advise you on how to install your purchase yourself, or Bertolt's offers a design and installation service for those larger, more complicated jobs. There's still lots to be done this year, so stop by Bertolt's Garden Center, 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. Look for the iconic windmill out front. Look for iconic Dr. Wally out front as well, or go to BertoltsGardenCenter.com. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I have Mr. Brown Thumb in the studio. We're talking about seed saving. And I asked him before the break what else you're and you can put that device down now, sir. You can just put it away.
Hey, I'm okay. Trying to drum up an audience for us here on Twitter.
Okay, I get it. All right, well then keep doing that. All right.
Yeah. I was posting out the link for the live stream. For some reason, it wasn't coming up right on my. I had scheduled it, you know, being the Twitter.
You'd schedule your Twitter obsessive and it Twitter. Didn't go.
It happened, but for some reason, I can see it in my stream when I look at it. But when I look at my timeline, I can't see it. I don't know, something's wrong, but. I tweeted it out again so people could listen to us online.
I hope they are. Yeah, you can stream us live at MikeNovak.net or ChicagosProgressiveTalk.com. And I hope you're doing that right now, or even old school, you know, over the airwaves at 92.5, 92.7, 99.9 FM, and, of course, the original 820 AM. So what other seeds?
Now, the easiest seeds that you could save from your garden would be the composite, the seeds for composite flowers. Mm-hmm. These are the ones that that have the petals that go around a dark center, usually an eye, like sunflowers, coneflowers, mm-hmm. black-eyed Susans. Basically, if you can get a plant and do that little game or nursery rhyme for when you were a kid, where like, he loves me now. All the seeds are located in the center. So after you decide whether he loved you or he loved you not, what you're left with is the seed head. And so you can just take these and usually you can just break them apart and separate the seeds from the chaff.
Okay.
So, and those are really the easiest ones. And it's one of the largest flower families. Yeah. So, I mean, every garden probably has a zinnia growing it now, or maybe even like a mum or coneflower or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's the largest plant flower type that you can get out
family there. I guess yeah. It's or genus, or what are we talking? No, that would be family, I think. At any rate, cool,
and it's the easiest one that you could possibly go out there and save. And I think even if you don't have an interest in seed saving, or you don't think it's really that important or whatever, I think you should learn to save at least one type of seed so that you can pass it on to somebody else.
So what about storage? So you got these seeds and you collect them. Some people say put them in a jar and then put them in the refrigerator. And because the moisture doesn't get in there and compromise the seed, and the coolness is also a benefit, right?
Right. I mean, if you ask this question online or you read about it online, you get a number of different answers. You know, I wrote a post once when I was writing for Tree Hugger about storing seeds or saving seeds, and somebody in the comment section wanted to argue with me about whether they should freeze the seeds. And mm-hmm. I don't recommend freezing seeds because I don't have experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
But this person was a big...
Versus just chilling them, they said freeze them.
Yeah, this person wanted to argue that putting the seeds in the freezer was the better way to do it than how I was doing it. And I was like, well, look, if I have seeds germinating after 7 years and they're just sitting in my bedroom, I don't really think that 3 more years being in a freezer is going to make that much of a difference, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the easiest way you can do it, I mean, I've done it in room temperature. I mean, I have a cigar box in my bedroom where I keep a lot of seeds, and I have some that I germinated this year that were in there for 7 years. Who knows how long they were there before the garden traded them
in an envelope or something?
Yeah.
It's just and that's the thing, Mr. Brown Thumb, that for those of us who have planted seeds before, we get lazy, we get forgetful, we discover a seed pack that's been sitting around for a while. We say, okay, let's see if any of these germinate. And often they do. Now, not at the same numbers as if you had just saved them from last year. But seeds remain viable depending on the plant, remain viable for a while.
Yeah. And seeds are one of those things that kind of like break all the rules. Like, it's people tell you, you know, store them at like 55 degrees and blah, blah, blah. Put them in your refrigerator. A lot of people say plastic containers, but some people say glass containers. And you might want to stick in a packet of silica gels from like your shoes when you go out and buy shoes or whatever. So you might want to do that. But you can leave them in your bedroom. I mean, you don't really need
to put them under the pillow.
Well, you know, you want to ideally leave them somewhere where they're cool, dark, and dry, you know? So,
yeah.
But I mean, room temperature is fine. I mean, as long as you don't have your bedroom freezing or your room freezing in the wintertime, or if it's not reaching 100 degrees during the summer, then you should be fine.
And then in the spring, you just plant them according to their specific needs. If you're, you know, if they're warm weather seeds, you're going to start them indoors or wait until the weather's warm enough. If they're cool weather seeds, you might direct sow them into the ground. It's the saving part is when you are saving. Let me ask you something about that, though. What about drying them out? They've been on these plants and there's moisture involved. What's the best way to dry out seeds without ruining the viability of them?
I found that the easiest way to do it is to just set them out on a plate, spread them out so that they're not touching, or there's only like one seed, they're not like piled up on top of each other.
Yeah.
I think that's the easiest way. And I keep it out of direct sunlight.
And how do you know when they're ready to put into storage at that point?
Well, if you've never saved seeds before, then you could always like Google the picture what it looks like when it comes out of the seed packet. So you want your seeds to look
that makes too much sense. It really does.
You know, that's when I've been new to saving a particular seed, I've saved a few from the original packet. I'll leave a few in there so I know at the end of the season what it looks like when it's ripe and it's ready to be put away.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They don't look much different. They look basically just like a dry version of what they looked like when you popped them out of a seed pod.
So here's the deal. You know, you save a seed. Don't leave it on the radiator all winter.
Exactly.
When it looks dry, put it in a container you're going to find it.
Paper envelope, those coin envelopes, those are my favorite. I mean, but people do Ziploc bags. People even go to the craft store and buy those little drug baggies.
Yeah, and if you listen to our wonderful friend Seed Savers. Oh, wait, that bell didn't work. Let's try that again. They're out there, and they're often listening to the show. You might give the Seed Saver kit, and then you have those envelopes, and you have everything ready to go.
Right. You can even make your envelopes. I mean, if you want to talk about sustainability, people make envelopes out of magazines that you can't recycle because they're glossy or a lot of color. They have a lot of ink on them. Yeah. So you can make your own envelopes that way. You can recycle newspaper and make your own envelopes that way.
All right. Before I let you go, give me a I'm sucker punching you here. There, have you germinated a seed that you didn't expect to germinate? Something you saved and you said, "Oh, this is never going to work," and then it worked.
Yeah, I think it was, but this was like early on. It was like an apple seed.
Mm-hmm.
I know. You can grow seeds. Apples from seeds, but they're usually,
they don't come true to form.
Right.
Yeah, to the parents' form.
So I think when I started off early, it was one of those things where it's like you eat an apple, you have a bunch of seeds, and you're like, well, let's see what happens with this. And you dump it into like a pot in your windowsill or something. And then you get an orange and you do the same thing. And eventually, I mean, those probably don't develop into much, but they were really surprising to me when I did. I think it was in college the first time I did. I was like, whoa, this is awesome.
I might grow an apple tree. And then I heard the story of Johnny Appleseed. You know the just story of Johnny. Have you read Michael Pollan's book, Botany of Desire?
No, I've seen the documentary.
Oh, okay. It's just cool. Cheated. Johnny Appleseed spreading the gospel of apple mash. Not of apples, but of alcohol made from apples. Because the seeds don't come true. So if you're throwing apple seeds on the ground and trying to get them, you don't know what you're going to come up with. The only way you can come true to form is grafting.
Right.
So Johnny Appleseed was just, you know, you can make apple mash out of any kind of apple. So he didn't care. It's like, okay, everybody drink up. That's Mr. Brown Thumb. Always great having you on the show, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome to call anytime. Give us all of your places where we can connect with you.
Well, the easiest way you can, if you want to read some of the seed saving articles or see some of the videos, you can just go to mrbrownthumb.blogspot.com. Easiest way to do it.
Yeah, if you just type in Mr. Brown Thumb online,
it'll probably come up.
Bam, it's going to go right to his.
And there's a tab that says seed saving, so make it easy.
And Isaiah, I want to thank you for being here too and putting up with us. What do you got planned for today, Isaiah?
Are you going to church?
Nothing? Are you going to church?
There's still time. We can make it there.
Don't corrupt the boy, all right? All right. Thanks, and we'll talk again real soon.
Thank you very much.
Speaking of seeds, D. Landreth Seed Company has an announcement. The fall bulbs have arrived. Now is the time to order bulbs like grape hyacinth, Thomas Jefferson's favorite. Recorded in his diaries was the tassel hyacinth, Muscari camosum. Or you might consider the trumpet daffodil, Spellbinder. They are called trumpets because the central conical petal is called a trumpet. It is also known as a corona. You might also be interested in English bluebells. This bulb is native to the Mediterranean region, but it was brought to England so long ago, and it flourished there with such enthusiasm that many Brits for many centuries believed the plant to be native to the British Isles. Hate to abuse you of that. Or try a true American native, Camassia Quamish. In 1806, as they were heading home from their incredible and historic venture across the American continent, Meriwether Lewis and William Clark found this plant growing abundantly in what is now Clearwater County, Idaho. Unlike many bulbs, it thrives in heavy, damp clay soils and in the partial shade of light woodland. Find out more about these many wonderful historic bulbs at LandrethSeeds.com or go to their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., or call 800-654-2407.
2407, D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seed since 1784.
Hi, this is Ron Calvio from Mighty House. Are you looking for a new ride? Looking for a cool ride? Looking for a ride that you can plug in so you can flip off the guy at the gas station? Well, here's your chance to get one for as little as $40. The Illinois Solar Energy Association is raffling off a 2014 Chevy Volt, and only 3,000 tickets will be sold. So how do you win? Go to illinoisolar.org and click on the link to the Chevy Volt raffle. You can buy one ticket for $40, two tickets for $60, or four tickets for $100. All raffle proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout the state of Illinois. The winner will be drawn at the ISEA member meeting on December 7th, 2013. Again, that's illinoisolar.org to buy your tickets and to get all the small print details.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
This is not the time for the left ear of the headset to fall completely off. That's okay. Who needs the left ear? Hey, we're rolling into October, like it or not, and for some of us, it's like a bowling ball rolling into a gutter. Still, there are plenty of things you can learn by picking up a copy of the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. For instance, the Q&A column features a question about what to do during the winter if you have elephant ears. Aside from the fact that it brings back painful childhood memories for me, it's a legitimate question. And Adele Klein has the answer. She also explains what the NPK numbers that you see on fertilizer labels stand for. Hint, it's not short for no parking. The Ask Our Experts column explores which perennials benefit from being divided in the fall. Think about working on your hostas, daylilies, sedums, iris, peonies, coral bells, monarda, astilbe, and hardy geraniums. Then there's my column on the inside back page. It should be divided into small, bite-sized portions and absorbed as slowly as possible. Don't ask me why. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Do it now. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. And then, oops, wait a second. That's not going to work. Okay, so let's go with this one instead. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. It's that time in the 9 o'clock hour to go to our meteorologist, Rick DeMaio. Rick, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Mike. It's the kind of morning where my mother said the angels whitewashed the sky.
Oh. Does that have to do with the rain we had overnight?
The rain and the fact that we kind of cleared out a little bit of the haze and humidity from yesterday, and you step outside, and obviously you have been outside, but if your listeners have not been outside, you can almost, it almost has that kind of spring-like, like I call it, like that April fresh downy smell to it. Even though it's the end of September and it's the last weekend of September, and all of a sudden you look at the calendar and go, holy smoke.
Yeah.
October's right around the corner. It still feels almost like a spring-like morning out there. To me, this still, and I know you and I agree on it, the best time of the year. Everything's in full bloom. If people have not gotten down to Michigan Avenue, particularly the gardens in front of the Hilton or down by the Blackstone or further along Michigan Avenue, Mike, the gardens just look unbelievably beautiful. They really do. The city's done a great job with it.
It's sort of the last hurrah of that, and now we have well, it is, and you know, and you've got, and now we got some warm weather, and we got some rain, and that was. I have to tell you, I could smell the rain coming in the open bedroom window last night, and man, that's just the best smell in the whole world, I think.
Yeah, it really is. And we got about a quarter of an inch in some locations. Not a lot. We weren't expecting to get a lot. But the good thing about this time of the year when it does rain, the ground will still, you know, it'll soak it up a little bit. But we can definitely use some, even though we had a fair amount in the first part of September, the last week and a half. I'm not complaining because the weather's been about as beautiful as you can get. And, you know, you've reminded your listeners that obviously you got to still do a lot of watering. But still, Mike, the pattern is does not bode well for any substantial rainfall around here. As everything, I don't know if you watched any of the sports last night that was showing some clips of a game, college game being played out in Oregon where the rain was coming in sideways at like 40 miles an hour. Huge storm systems belting the Pacific Northwest. And believe it or not, Mike, those are actually remnants of typhoons that have actually pushed across portions of Japan and also southern China and southern Korea over the last couple of weeks and have now metamorphosized into other storms. They typically do that this time of the year, but parts of the Gulf of Alaska and the Pacific Northwest right now really being battered with 40-50 mile-per-hour winds, 20 to 30-foot waves, torrential rain. And here in the Midwest, we're kind of the beneficiaries of this wind coming across the Rocky Mountains and producing mild temperatures. And it has that almost Pacific air feel to it as well, and will continue kind of in that regime for probably the next week to 10 days. Nothing seems to be changing otherwise, but the weather out across Pacific Northwest, we'll actually enjoy some good stuff.
And I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the intergovermental panel.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Oh, I'm ready to talk about that, without a doubt. That's interesting, Mike, because a lot of stuff has been going on at the UN over the last couple of weeks. Obviously, President Obama was there. His historic phone call to the president of Iran. I know that kind of gets missed by some people and say he's not doing as good of a job there, but I'm always one to bring that up. And Mike, I'm the happiest person in the world because beginning very, very soon on WLS Radio at 6 p.m. in the evening, we will no longer hear the voice of Sean Hannity. I am so happy about that.
One of the great climate deniers, huh? Climate change deniers.
God. That man, and you know what, I can say this because he takes just about every single bit of news that is non-news and makes it into news, and he thinks anybody who is into science is crazy when it relates to climate change. And not only does he have this huge platform on WLS Radio, but also on Fox News Channel at night, and I'm just blown away that someone like that continues to get the amount of airtime he does, both radio and TV. But I'm so happy that he's no longer going to be in Chicago. And it's okay that I say that, right?
I don't care. Yeah, I'm not, you know.
I like the way you said I don't care.
I don't care. It doesn't bother me one whit.
Because I know what's going to happen, even though that the Earth's atmosphere has not warmed as much as it has over the last 10 years compared to the previous 30 years. We've been seeing this trend for a while. We've definitely been seeing that the warming has actually slowed down a little bit. And you know what? We're happy about that. We're not going to come out and say, oh, you see, we were right. It's going to continue to get warmer, and therefore you should never drive a car again. That's not what this is about. This is all about understanding that humans continue to alter the climate, and the intergovernmental report continues to say that there still is a 95% certainty that humans have continued to have caused most of the warming of the planet's surface since the 1950s, even though the Earth's temperature is actually not warmed as much. There's been what we call a little bit of a pause to that. That's still up from 90% from the report that was issued 6 years ago back in 2007. So we've actually increased the percentage of how we believe and how we've assessed how humans have actually influenced the changing climate of the Earth's surface.
And what we need to stress here for those people who still say, oh, it's just their opinion. No, we're talking about peer-reviewed science. This is peer-reviewed science.
Right. If it's happened, then it's science. And I think what we need to explain to the listeners is what peer review means, because even when I was going through high school and undergraduate programs in college, you didn't really know what that was until you get into a master's program. Basically, you could write all the reports in the world. You can have them published on blogs. You can have published in newsletters. You can have them mailed to people. But unless they're actually reviewed, by peers in the science, not just one or two, but usually about a good 20 or 30, then it's actually accepted as fact. Then it's actually accepted as science. And then it's actually accepted at that point as real information. News doesn't have to be peer reviewed when it comes to science, unfortunately. And that's really a shame about it, because that's how a lot of this information has been disseminated, Mike.
Yeah, and very briefly, one of the things they did with the latest report is established a target level at which we need to stop putting greenhouse gases into the atmosphere or face irreversible climatic changes. I mean, this is the first time that the scientists have done that, too. I mean, they're getting more and more specific as we go along, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think what they're able to do is, is they're actually able to figure out, kind of by looking at some of these past reports and looking at some of this past data, is to begin to see key components of the climate system that needs to be targeted. And those are the things we look at, and those are the things we say, you know what? I think we have to kind of focus in on that and see how that changes. Because as we all know, it's very, very complicated to figure out, is the Earth's climate naturally changing? We know that. How do humans change that? And how do we make the natural variability become even more variable? And I teach a climate change class, Mike, every semester. Every semester, I'm rewriting different ways of explaining the science, rewriting different ways of understanding how to assess this information, and also re-educating my students on what was good and what was not, you know, good data. And I think we're all learning from this. But what we can do is stick our heads in the sand and say it's not happening, and unfortunately still continue to happen on the other side.
All right, 30 seconds. You got a forecast for us.
Yeah, 30 seconds, Mike, of great weather. Front came through last night. We had about a quarter inch rain. Mostly sunny today, upper 60s. Lower 70s tomorrow, mid 70s Tuesday and Wednesday. Next best chance of any rain, Mike, maybe not until next Saturday. So really great late September, early October weather. Enjoy it.
Wow, that was 25 seconds. Very good. I appreciate it. All right.
Only 5 seconds to clear my throat. Look at that day. My allergies are bothering me right now.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, go take some medication or just blow your nose.
Oh, have a drink, yeah.
Hey, wait till noon, okay? All right, we'll talk to you next week, Rick.
Yeah, Mike.
All right, coming up in the second hour is the ways that Cook County is trying to clean things up environmentally.
One, two, three, four.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green. Let's get growing. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Belinda, I'm still in love with you. I see you in the birds and in the trees. That's why they call me Krishnamayi. Oh, every time.
I could just sit and listen to the Pretenders all day. Welcome back to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Before we get to our guest here, I want to make sure that I cover something else, because I got a thing in the mail from Garfield Farm Museum, and I wanted to give them an opportunity here to get their information across. It's something going on next Sunday, October 6th. Discover how our ancestors survived before modern technology and before the Pretenders at Garfield Farm Museum's Harvest Days on Sunday, October 6th from 11:30 a.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. Historic household and farm skills will be demonstrated at this 1840s Living History Farm Museum located near Geneva and St. Charles. I've been there. It's very cool. For information, call 630-584-8485, or you can email info@garfieldfarm.com. www.garden-love.org. And you can also go to their website, www.garfieldfarm.org. And that's next Sunday, October 6th, 11:30 to 4 o'clock p.m. It's a lot of fun. Bring the family, as they say. And I'm happy to welcome into the studio today Deborah C. Stone, who's the Chief Sustainability Officer and Director of the Cook County Department of Environmental Control. Deborah, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I've been learning a lot in the last couple of weeks about stuff that I didn't realize was a problem in Cook County, and I guess that's one of the things, that's part of your job, is to get that information out. I don't know if you saw what I posted on my website, but what I called attention to was the fact that probably most people don't know that this initiative is happening, or that the council, Cook County Board is looking at an ordinance of this type, and maybe they weren't even aware that there are problems in the county with fly dumping, with regulating recycling facilities, that sort of thing. Can you tell me the extent of the problem in Cook County? And we're talking about suburban, not Chicago, because Chicago's a different situation, right?
Well, that's right, Mike. And Cook County has had an environment department for about 40 years, and they've been very strong in the air pollution area. But under President Preckwinkle, she's really pushed us to take a broader look at sustainability. And part of that is that she signed on to a greenhouse gas reduction goal of 80%, but also how we
by
deal,
when?
By 2050.
Okay.
And that's consistent with the city of Chicago's plan. It's consistent with many international governments, and it kind of brings Cook County up to where we should be, and makes us a player. And by the way, we're already ahead of that goal, and we hope to surpass it.
Really? Now,
it'll be tough.
How do you measure that?
At this point, the only part that we're really able to measure, but it's by far the largest point, is what is due to heating and cooling and power use in our buildings. In Cook County overall, that's by far the biggest cause of greenhouse gas emissions. And it's a what goes in must come out. If you can use less power, less electricity, less natural gas, you'll be emitting less greenhouse gases.
It seems to me, having looked at this over several years and talked about it on the show, that right now, and I could be wrong about this, but and the city of Chicago is going in this direction too, retrofitting. Retrofitting seems to be the key to real success in reducing emissions.
Well, that's right. We're not building a lot of new buildings for Cook County government. In fact, the size of the government is shrinking. But we know that our biggest guzzlers of energy are the Department of Corrections campus and the hospital campus. And they're the biggest collection of buildings. Many of them are old, although not all. And if you think about it, guests at those facilities, whether they want to be there or not, are there 24 hours.
Yeah.
So they're very intensive energy users. And the county has started the biggest guaranteed energy savings projects ever undertaken by a county. We are having $60 million of retrofit investments made in those campuses that is entirely funded by the energy cost savings. So it's good for the taxpayer. It's good for the environment. And it will probably also be good for the operation of the buildings. They'll be more efficient. And we're looking at a second round of projects like that, again, to be funded out of the savings at our kind of next biggest chunk of buildings.
And that's always something that you guys are looking at, funding citywide, countywide, is always controversial.
It's always controversial, and that's why we really like the idea of showing that your savings are going to more than pay for the investments.
Mm-hmm. But to get back to the real reason you're here, and something I wrote on my website, and maybe it's not fair
But I did a little Google search of this ordinance and the introduction of this ordinance and got absolutely nothing. You know, you guys send out information because that's what your press office does. And this was introduced a couple weeks ago on September 11th. But it's not something that's getting a lot of headlines. And yet this is an issue that we really need to be concerned about. And that's, as I mentioned before, fly dumping. Inspecting and enforcing environmental health and safety issues at landfills, transfer stations, recycling facilities. I mean, this is all stuff that most people never see. They just don't know, do they?
Well, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. And in our society, I like to say that we engage in magical thinking about our garbage.
Well, yeah, we say we throw it. And we've had the discussion on the show before where we talk about going away.
We
throwing away. And where is away exactly?
I'm still waiting for somebody to show me where this magical place is. But the reality is that in suburban Cook County, and suburban Cook County is a big place. It's got 2.5 million people. It's got 128 municipalities, and they're very different from each other. Each one has their own needs, and that's one of the reasons that, you know, we can't make blanket statements, and it's one of the reasons that people don't think about Cook County as a whole, because it is so varied, and we're trying to approach it such that every community has input, every community's differences are recognized, and the 128 communities, we think, gives us, out of the box, very strong partners in this work. So local citizens really hear from their municipalities about how their garbage is picked up, and nothing we do will change that relationship.
Okay, and I guess that's where we need to start, because I'm sure there are folks that say, oh no, I don't want the county telling me what to do, just like I don't want the state telling me what to do. I don't want Chicago telling me what to do.
And so none of that will change. What we're looking at is the big facilities that most people don't see, landfills and transfer stations. And in case your listeners aren't aware, although probably most of them are, transfer stations is where your city.
I think it's worth explaining, because I think there's you say transfer station, people go, what?
Well, it's not where you catch the number 54 bus, but it's where your city garbage trucks and your waste management or whatever trucks go to dump their garbage. It's then consolidated into much bigger trucks, which take it away to landfills. And most of the garbage from the Chicago metropolitan area is going to places like Wisconsin and Rockford and Indiana.
I did a garden talk in Indiana yesterday. The master gardeners down there. And it was wonderful, I mean, to do that. But we had, there was a little discussion about how we're really good in Illinois at sending our garbage to different states, like Indiana.
Well, that doesn't mean that garbage doesn't still impact our communities. It moves through our communities, and it's temporarily stored in our communities at these transfer stations. There are over 35 transfer stations in suburban Cook County. They're all over the county. They're north, they're west, they're south. And we've got a lot of trash moving through. Per person in Cook County, many parts of Cook County generate almost 8 pounds of trash a day. And if you compare that to what the U.S. EPA says the average person in the U.S. generates, about 4.4 pounds, that's an interesting issue. And from what we know about our recycling rates, also, again, they vary. Different parts of the county are different. Mm-hmm. Some are doing as high as 45% recycling, which is good, but can be better.
Sure.
And some are as low as 25% or even 18%.
It depends
issues.
What you define as recycling. Okay, and again, the example I will use is the city of Chicago. If you go online and you look for recycling leaders in the country, and you hit a search engine and you type in that question, Chicago's going to pop up as one of the leaders. And for people who live in the city of Chicago who can't get a bottle or a can recycled properly, they're going to scratch their heads and go, what? How is it possible that Chicago's a leader? Well, it's because their construction and demolition ordinance is so successful. And when you look by volume and you look by weight, that inflates those recycling numbers. And yes, it's wonderful. I think it's a fabulous ordinance, and it works very well. And a lot of, you know, those rates
you know, some people say it might be as high as 85%. I think that's like inflated, but it's pretty good. All right, let's put it that way. Problem is, our papers and cans and plastic bottles, not so good. We haven't even rolled out all the blue carts in the neighborhoods yet, let alone the high rises. We don't deal with that at all. So numbers cannot tell the full story in any given situation. So as you say, in the suburbs, you have some of the same problem. You've got certain municipalities that do it very well and others not so much. And then you have unincorporated parts of Cook County as well.
Sure. Of the 2.5 million people in the county, about 85,000 live in the unincorporated areas. And some of those issues that you described in Chicago also carry over to suburban Cook. And I should mention that we also have a demolition debris ordinance. Of course, we think ours is more successful.
The county.
The county and for the suburban area. And maybe a little later, I'll have a chance to talk about that a little bit. But not knowing exactly what's happening with the waste stream is a huge issue. The Illinois EPA stopped publishing data after 2009. I think they're just short of staff. And that's part of what we're trying to address here. We're in what I would call a hole in the donut in suburban Cook County in terms of inspection, just household housekeeping of landfills and transfer stations.
Let alone the illegal stuff there, too.
There sure are.
But let alone people in the middle of the night opening the back of a truck and pouring it next to a river.
Embarrassingly enough, there is nothing in our county ordinance right now that allows us to prosecute open
dumping.
You mean
the current county ordinance?
Excuse me? In the current county ordinance.
Not the one that you've proposed.
No. And the one that we've proposed is in what I would call a discussion stage. We're having actually some really good discussions with the industry, with local communities, with the groups of mayors. Again, because our communities are so different, we want to make sure we're really meeting a need. And Chicago and all the counties that surround us and touch us all work with the state to inspect and regulate the landfills and transfer stations. And the city of Chicago also regulates recycling centers. And you think, well, why would you regulate recycling centers? They're good, right? Mm. And they perform a very important function in the community. And they can range from the neighborhood place where you take your cans to giant industrial facilities to very commonly they could be auto scrapyards. And if you think about what goes in there and what goes in must come out, a lot of
that,
toxic
that
chemicals.
Away thing.
That
yeah.
away thing. You know,
yeah.
I'm still waiting to figure that one out.
Yeah. But you do mention lots of toxic chemicals. Some of the things that bring into those stations are fraught with problems.
Yeah. Refrigerants, which are themselves a very potent greenhouse gas, and they all need to be dealt with responsibly. So that's part of what we're exploring with our partners. To do, we've also got some provisions in there to help fight metal theft. That's up, way up since the recession. And we want to make sure that there's proper record keeping if people are bringing in, manhole covers and gutters and tree grates.
Which they're not supposed to be bringing in because they're supposed to be in the city.
Unless they're the original owner, they're not supposed to be bringing them in.
Now, how serious a problem is that? I mean, you talk about this, you need to have some of these regulations and then the stuff that's coming in here. I hadn't thought about that before, which is, oh my gosh, people are bringing in stuff to recycle. Yeah, it can be recycled, but it's city property. You know, it's not supposed to have been ripped up, or somebody, you know, unhinges a gate from somebody's backyard and brings that in, that kind of stuff.
Well, unfortunately, I think due to the economic situation, there's a group based out of Des Plaines that is a sort of an industry group for the insurance industry, and they measure between a 30% and 40% increase since 2009 in metal theft.
Of what?
Of metal theft.
Countywide.
That's nationwide.
Nationwide, okay.
That's nationwide.
Wow.
So we're no different, but your readers might remember a story that appeared on the front page of the Tribune a couple months ago. A private school bus company had several dozen school buses stolen overnight, and by the time they caught up with them early in the morning, they were at a scrapyard, cut up into little yellow pieces.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
yeah, and that's the problem. Part of the problem, not just the theft and the cutting up the school bus into little yellow pieces, but the engine, the tires, the toxic materials, I had, I'm blanking on his name. And he's a board member, CRC, Carl Zimmering, who wrote a book, or edited a, encyclopedia on waste. And one of the things he talked about on this show that we don't think about, we don't make cars out of wood and metal that are so easily recyclable. We make cars out of all kinds of stuff that there's no way to process when we're done with them. Plastics and other kinds of new age products and materials. And it gets harder and harder as we get more sophisticated in that realm. So when you do cut up a school bus into little yellow pieces, you got all this stuff that can't be recycled in the traditional way, as you mentioned before, toxic materials and that sort of thing. And you're stuck with those as well.
And, you know, we worry about some of the less visible impacts from these facilities. Sure, we worry about the things that the neighbors might worry about, like blowing trash, mm-hmm. odors, dust, you know, track out of mud. But more pernicious can be what you can't see, which can be ground pollution or even water pollution from the chemicals dealt with in these facilities. And again, most of them are good businesses. And what we're really worried about are those kind of fly-by-night companies that nobody is finding and that, you know, come into a neighborhood, despoil a site, and then may leave. We've identified one site in a community that I won't name, but they're operating.
Oh, come on.
they're operating as a recycling facility, and they're obviously pulling some recyclables out of the trash, but they're basically pushing giant mountains of trash to the back of the site. Mm. And we went and looked it up, and they haven't paid property taxes in 3 years on this site. So you know that they're fixing to abandon the site, and the local community is going to be left to deal with the pollution and the property tax impacts.
That's a really good point, too. And by the way, let's do a recap here. Deborah C. Stone, Chief Sustainability Officer and Director of the Cook County Department of Environmental Control. That's a problem that another one that folks don't think of is that some of these recycling facilities, you have to use air quotes around because they're just a place for some people to come and quickly unload some stuff. And then, like you say, they do a runner and get out of business, and then the city or the county is left to clean up the mess.
And if they're doing that, they're really operating as a landfill without a permit. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that we want to look out for.
And right now, landfills are banned in Cook County.
They are banned by state law in the county. There won't be any new ones.
Right.
There is one that's still operating. They're not going to be open for long. They're really almost
right.
full.
There's one opening, and when it's filled, and the estimates are 6 months to a year, something like that, it'll be done. But that's part of the deal. So let's look at this proposed ordinance. And it bears going over again. You talk about your partners, which I assume are the municipalities involved.
The municipalities, the industry. We've been meeting almost weekly with one or another representatives of the owners of the transfer stations and haulers, and they've been incredibly responsive to reviewing drafts, giving us comments. If this doesn't work for all our partners, it's not going to work, and this is a very important process for us.
And what will this law do then if it is passed? I guess the concern of many people would be, what about my own municipality? Will we not have local jurisdiction anymore? The county is going to take over everything? How does that work?
No, this won't change anything in terms of your local municipality's role in collecting garbage, franchising haulers, or regulating what happens with your trash at home or with your local business. What this really will do is regulate the housekeeping and the environmental conditions at these big landfills. Excuse me, landfills and transfer stations, and at the recycling facilities. And it also would propose to gather information from these facilities and from the haulers about how much is moving through the waste stream. How much waste is there now that the Illinois EPA has no longer has the wherewithal to publish statistics?
You know, okay, let's stop there for a second because that's a little disturbing, too. That you say, well, the Illinois EPA doesn't have the wherewithal to handle this. That's That's not encouraging. So are you, you're stepping up simply because, as you said, hole in the donut, this is where the county can come in and do some good work.
I think that's right. And most municipalities know their own statistics. They know what they pick up or they know what they contract for. What they may not know is, however, what gets picked up from private, commercial, industrial, and institutional contracts. And that's a big part of the waste stream. And we're hoping to kind of finally bound the problem and get some overall numbers on what's going on and how much is being recycled. And, you know, you can't improve your sustainability if you don't know where you are. And we think, too, that there is a tremendous amount of economic opportunity in the waste stream. An example of that would be the demolition debris diversion ordinance that we have, where we're getting a lot of economic value back out of building materials. But as you mentioned, regular recyclables, paper, cans, bottles are still a disturbingly large percentage of the waste stream. And the next frontier, we think, is organics. Everybody knows that mm-hmm. you can do something with organics. The market is just not quite together there.
Well, we're just getting up to speed in Illinois with the laws that regulate composting and organics in the state. And as you know, depending on which statistics you look at, organic materials account for around a third of the waste stream, which is, that's huge. That's a lot of tonnage.
It's huge, and it's got value. We've got a not-for-profit partner. Actually, it's Ken Ortiz from the Reuse People, who likes to say there's no such thing as waste. Waste mm-hmm. is just a resource in the wrong place. And I like that because it kind of makes you look at all of this stuff differently and think it's about like, the fact that, we're buying the same stuff and then we go and throw it away and it's usable.
The same thing applies to horticulture. People say weeds are just plants out of place. And in a sense, there's a connection there.
I think he probably riffed on that. Yeah.
I tell you what, we've got some calls coming in. So I want to handle those. So hang on a second, 773-763-9278, and one of them has to do with the fly-by-night recycling station, so we'll see where that takes us. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. That's Deborah C. Stone with the Cook County Department of Environmental Control. We're talking about unregulated waste and recycling and how to regulate it. A proposed ordinance in the county, and you can always call us 773-763-9278. It's Dr. Wally's Tip of the Week, brought to you by Bertolt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village. Wally's a pretty tough guy, but he wants you to try some pansies that really take off in your fall containers and landscapes. Bertolt's has a great selection of the Wonderfall pansies. Wonderfall. Get it? Pansies, they're just right for your yard. Wonderfall pansies are ideal for hanging baskets and large planters. This spreading, trailing series of plants blankets itself with flowers for fall, quickly filling in, and cascading when grown in containers. Unlike traditional pansies, Wonderfall pansies cover 75% more ground area than traditional pansies and 10% more ground area than other trailing varieties, requiring less planting density. It means you don't have to buy as many plants. For mums, fall accent plants, Wonderfall pansies, great organic fertilizers and amendments, and the proper advice to get the job done correctly, stop by Bertolt's Garden Center and Nursery. Now, they're located at 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. We call that suburban Cook County. You can look for the iconic windmill out front or go to bertoltsgardencenter.com.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
And then the announcer breaks his headsets again and says, a simple change in your lawn care. Look at this. Carol, this every time I turn around, the left earpiece just sort of flops off, and I'm not sure why that happens here. But okay, I'm going to just put it on the counter in front of me. Is that okay?
Can I just leave it here? Next to your bell?
Next to the bell. There we go. There we go. A simple change in your lawn care practices this fall can create a carpet of green next spring that's safe for children and pets, thanks to Milorganite. When the weather begins to cool, your lawn starts to build back its root system. The lawn really loves the rain we had last night, by the way. But it also needs extra nourishment. That's why experts agree that fall is the best time to fertilize your lawn. Most lawn fertilizers release their nutrients quickly, which produces lots of clippings and reduces root growth. But Milorganite, an organic nitrogen fertilizer, feeds your lawn slowly throughout the fall, providing more green color with less clippings and maximum recovery from summer stress. It's a trick golf course superintendents have used for decades. Milorganite applied now will help your lawn green up faster in spring while helping it recover quickly from winter damage. You'll improve your lawn's overall health and greatly reduce weed problems. So give your lawn the food it needs, Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com. That's spelled Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You know what? Ask and ye shall receive. Then Denny comes running here. Hey, you need a new pair of headsets?
I knew he would. He's on it.
He's on the job. And you just got to pop the thing back in on the head thing. We have in the studio, Deborah C. Stone from the Cook County Department of Environmental Control, talking recycling facilities and transfer stations and fly dump. We haven't really gotten into the fly dumping thing, which I want to do before I get you out of here in about 10 minutes. But we got some phone calls, so let's go to the phones and first talk to David. Good morning. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hey, morning, Mike and Deborah. You know, I wanted to ask you, it perked my ears up when I heard you talking about the recycling centers that have become fly-by-night and then they've become dumps. And I'm just wondering, there's two questions about it. One is if the commodity prices are kind of causing that. In other words, typically if aluminum prices are good, people will be dropping stuff in there constantly. But quite often the recycling center may hold on to it for an extra week or so just to see if they can get a better price when they sell it to the wholesaler. And if the price falls, then they end up holding on to it longer. And so they can kind of bankrupt themselves because the rent that they're paying has to be paid, but they've got to they've taken a loss because they paid when it was high, and they're trying to sell when it's low. So I'm just wondering if commodity prices are part of that. And the other is whether or not hazardous wastes are being, whether legally or illegally, added into that mix. I've talked to a bunch of these, you know, the guys that walk around with shopping carts and picking up aluminum cans, and it's kind of a known trick that they'll take a battery, you know, like a little AA or AAA battery, and slip it in the aluminum can, and then it'll add weight to it. And the batteries, of course, are poisonous. And so if you start taking that aluminum and mix, you know, melting it down to make new cans, you're adding in a poison to the, you know, to the aluminum stream. So I'm just wondering if there's, you know, obviously, I would bet that the, you know, the aluminum companies have known about this for years. So if there's some way that the aluminum can be, you know, kept clean by giving people who are doing honest recycling a fair price for not intentionally poisoning it.
That's a I had not heard about that trick, David, but it seems to make sense. Deborah, what's your response?
Well, I think commodity prices are absolutely part of it, and recycling economics are very complicated and they can change very fast. Another part of the cost, though, is the tipping fees that are paid to put the waste in its final resting place, so to speak, and the transportation costs. And those things are often kind of inverses of each other. We are putting our landfills further and further away in greenfields, 50 miles, 100 miles more, and we are paying more in transportation fees. So those play into it, too. If you have an inexpensive material, a lot of times it can be demolition debris from a building. Do you want to drive that material a long way and use a lot of gas and then pay to get rid of it? That's why you sometimes find it in a field behind some trees. And I think that by being able to regularly inspect these facilities, including recycling centers, you're going to be able to see, not 100%, but you're going to be able to see if they're taking materials that they shouldn't. An important one is electronics, which since January of 2012 in Illinois have been banned from landfills. And I'm certain that some of those are still going through the waste stream. For transfer stations, another thing you'd want to watch out for is whether medical waste is going through there. So you're not going to be able to stop it completely. You're going to be able to get a better handle on what's going through the waste stream, and you're going to be able to prosecute people who are regularly doing this illegal dumping as a business practice.
You know, I will say, hey, look, yard waste is not supposed to go into landfills, and I can name a large major metropolitan city with over 2 million people that regularly puts yard waste into landfills in violation of state law, but I'm just guessing here. David, great point. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no trouble. And by the way, I just as a side note, you know, people think of recycling as being, you know, something kind of hippie-ish or whatever. But for at least 50 years, hazardous wastes, you know, it's been known that organized crime was cashing in on hazardous wastes. That they had, you know, trash hauling businesses, and they were being paid fantastic amounts of money to take care of hazardous waste, but they were actually just dumping it in the river and pocketing the money. So I'm just wondering, you know, if the city has been able to get a handle on that. This is not a local issue. It's a nationwide or international issue.
Well, we'll start locally. We'll start with the county and see what we can do. David, thanks for the call. Have a great Sunday. Bye-bye. 773-763-9278. Let's go to JR. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Deborah. My question would be we went back to the IEPA and not taking records, not doing this, that, but they still have their one-inch thick, the Act, the Environmental Protection Act in Illinois. And when how is the county going to address trumping the Act, you know, being able to, you know, go through things that some of it's antiquated, some of the laws and some of the interpretations of the Act, we're not set up for the different landfills and different transfer stations, especially the C&D end of it.
That's an excellent question, JR. And Deborah, your response to that?
Our approach is not to try to trump the state act, but to work with it and then to address our local concerns as well. There are 18 counties in the state of Illinois, plus also the city of Chicago, who have an intergovernmental agreement with the IEPA where the local entity will do the inspections for the state. And the IEPA and these localities, which, by the way, include many of our neighbors that touch Cook County, so Lake County, DuPage, McHenry, Will County, all do this, as well as the city of Chicago, have agreed that inspection by a local entity is more efficient and better done by people who know the local communities and who can develop relationships with the local communities, the businesses, and the police. So what's happening in those areas is instead of duplication, there's actually an efficiency because two governments are working together and they just have one set of inspections. There's obviously things that we care about locally, like the recycling centers that are not part of the IEP Act. And just like the city of Chicago, which also regulates recycling centers, we are looking heavily at doing that in suburban Cook County just because there's so many of them.
773-763-9278 is our phone number. We seem to have hit a nerve here because suddenly the phone's just lit up. But, you know, sometimes you wonder. We start this conversation and I'm thinking, oh, well, who's interested in what's happening in recycling and transfer stations in Cook County outside of Chicago? And then suddenly, bam, everybody calls in. And Bob has a question, which I suspect is near and dear to my heart. Bob, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Okay.
Three small children and their toys are operated by batteries, and I work in a school with a lot of calculators and go through a lot of batteries there, and I know we shouldn't just be tossing them in the trash, so what can we do with them?
You know, first I'm going to jump in here because I've had some experience with this, and I'm going to get you off the hook a little bit here, Deborah. Since we're talking IEPA, it depends on the battery. If you're using reusable batteries, obviously you want to reuse them. And at some point, when those become less effective, those can be recycled. The problem is the so-called traditional batteries, the non-recyclable batteries, in most states, and it's not just Illinois, you go to most states and they will say, oh, throw them in the garbage. And I've talked to the IEPA in Illinois. I had a conversation with somebody there, and I don't even remember the name. It doesn't really matter. Who said, we tell people to throw them in the garbage because their contention is that there's not enough recyclable stuff in those batteries to make a difference. Now, my feeling is, and probably yours, Bob, having children and you use them over and over again, what happens when you get into the millions and billions of batteries? You can't tell me there's not enough recyclable stuff there. But we're unfortunately, and I've mentioned this on my show before, we've taken a backward step, in my opinion. Where we used to recycle batteries, we don't. And that's, again, the traditional ones that are not recyclable. In my world, when I'm king, I outlaw batteries that are not recyclable. I think that's something that we could do, and we don't have the political will to do that. But meanwhile, people like you, Bob, who are concerned, don't have much recourse about this. Now, is there something I'm missing here, Deborah? No.
Nope.
No, okay.
Good coverage, Bob.
So I wish I could be more positive about this. Now, maybe somebody else listening knows of some place that will take these batteries. I can tell you that as a matter of policy, the IEPA says throw them away. And, of course, Deborah and I know there's no such thing as a way. But it kind of annoys me because they don't have the guts to put that on their website. Because you can try to find it and look it up, but it's not there. So they just sort of, on the sly, throw them away.
Well, I'm thinking, forget about the fact that there may not be enough to recycle. The heavy metals that are in batteries aren't good for the groundwater.
You know, I don't. I'm agreeing with you, Bob. I don't know the science behind what the heavy metals are, and I think that most of the heavy metals have been taken out of batteries, and that's why they're allowing them to be thrown away. It's not batteries are the batteries today are not your grandfather's right. batteries, and so there are. I don't think there's really an appreciable concentration of heavy metals in those batteries, which is why they say, "Hey, you can." Throw them away. So there you go.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Let's take one more. Bernie, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this subject up. You know, the city with the county had recycling bins in like Dan Ryan Woods on 83rd and Western. And the thing was always full. The city went to their recycling program. They didn't even give it a chance to see if that would be convenient for some people. What difference did it make?
Well, you know, I'm telling you, Bernie, the city only took their cue from the IEPA. The city was told by the IEPA, you know, when the IEPA basically said gave up on the recycling batteries, the city did too. And you can't blame the city because if they don't have to spend that money, then, you know, and if state law, the state agency is saying we don't want to recycle those, why would the city do it? And I have to admit, I'm not crazy about it, but on the other hand, I can't blame
them. I guess maybe you're not understanding me.
Okay, what are you saying?
I'm saying that the city had recycling dumpsters in the parks.
Oh.
In the Cook County Park.
Okay, you're not talking
when
batteries.
The city made the switch. They didn't even give it a chance to see if people's would still like to keep dumping there.
When they made the switch to what?
They went and put those blue carts all over the city.
Well, are you talking about carts in the park district?
Let me say this again.
Okay.
The city switched at a certain date. The switch and start putting the blue carts behind everybody's in the
alley.
Yeah,
that's right. Residences.
Well,
yes.
Okay. They used to have the dumpsters in the Cook County Parks in Ryan Woods.
Ah. Oh, you're talking about the
recycling. And they were always filled. The city did not even give it a chance to see if they could work in conjunction with the carts in the alley. In other words, what difference does it make? If we get rid of the recycling product, what difference does it make? If it would have been, and I'm sure it's cheap somebody has to just pick up one dumpster.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Bernie, unfortunately, that's a city problem, not a county problem. We're talking county here, and you know, if they took away they used to have the 33 drop-off locations throughout the city, and now the blue cart's rolling on, and I imagine those, as you say, drop-off locations are going away. Why not be redundant and have those as well? But I guess that's not the way the city is going to go. I'll tell you what, I'm going to look into that, Bernie, because I'm not sure if they all went away. You say the Dan Ryan Woods did, but I want to get back real quick to wrap up with Deborah. So thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Real quick, because I got to get to giant pumpkins. fly dumping is all part of this ordinance. How serious a problem is fly dumping in Cook County?
Well, again, it varies from community by community, but we've seen it south, we've seen it west, we've seen it north, and it tends to be more of a problem in communities that either have open spaces or industrial areas where it can be kind of hidden, or also in communities that don't have as much resources for constant local policing. So you might not see it in your community, but it may be in your neighboring community and the one next to that. And it's not just in a few locations.
All right. So I'm going to recap real quick. You've got this ordinance. It was introduced. It's going to have comprehensive data that does not now exist on volume of waste, how much is being recycled, what's in the waste stream, more frequent inspections of landfills, waste transfer stations, composting facilities, monitoring of recycling facilities, junkyards, scrap collectors, compost facilities. You're going to be able to respond quickly. Unlike the IEPA, as you said, they're running out of cash and the ability to do this. And some municipalities don't have the money either, do they?
Well, that's right. And this is something that we're working with the municipalities on. Tomorrow, we're going to be down in the southwest suburbs talking to the local mayors. And the week after that, we'll be in the south suburbs. And we've been north and west. And again, we're looking to work with our partners to figure out where we can have value add.
So what would you like the average Cook County citizen to do? I have got links to the commissioners on my website. Go to Mike Novak. .net, this week's show. You can click on if you live in the city of Chicago or if you live in suburban Cook County. What do you want them to tell their commissioners?
Well, I think tell their commissioners and also tell us at the department what they see their local needs as being. We're in listening mode right now, and we want to make more connections locally, find more people who are concerned about these issues and find out what it is that they're concerned about mm-hmm. so that we can better tailor our program as it develops to meet the local needs.
Well, if they want to get a hold of your department, do you have a website website and an email address?
They can email me at Deborah, Deborah, Stone, Stone, mm-hmm. at, take a deep breath, Cook County IL, that's all one word, CookCountyIL.gov.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not that bad.
Not that bad.
Is there a website you would have them go to find more info? I tell you what, just go to my website because I got all the information up there. I've linked it to everything. You'll know what the issue is, what's going on. I know that the Chicago Recycling Coalition, which I am president of full disclosure, is going to support this ordinance. We've crafted a letter, which I'm going to show you later.
Great. We're grateful.
And we're going to do that. And I hope other people will get on board. It sounds like it's a necessary thing to have happen and with little cost and much efficiency. I think it just seems like it's a win-win situation.
We're all about trying to look for efficiencies.
Yeah. All right. Deborah C. Stone, thank you so much. I'm sure we'll be talking more about this in the future.
Thank you.
If you go to Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center Facebook page right now, you're going to see a lot of happy faces. Those are the people who showed up yesterday for the first day of the Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center's Fall Harvest Festival. They were carving pumpkins, building scarecrows, watching puppet shows, painting faces, potting pansies, and visiting the petting zoo, mini maze, and doing the kinds of things you want to do on a beautiful fall afternoon. We're going to have another beautiful fall afternoon today. And if you couldn't get there yesterday, here's the second day of the Fall Harvest Festival. It's from 11 a.m. You might be driving over there right now listening to this show. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Head on over. And did I mention there are balloon animals and a cookie station with $1 cookies to benefit Columbus Elementary School? Even the store chickens, Buttercup and Starla, are ready to roll out the welcome mat for you. The fun is from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. today at Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center, 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village. Stop by and tell them Mike sent you. Christy Weber Landscapes, right in your own backyard.
Hi, this is Ron Calvio from Mighty House. Are you looking for a new ride? Looking for a cool ride? Looking for a ride that you can plug in so you can flip off the guy at the gas station? Well, here's your chance to get one for as little as $40. The Illinois Solar Energy Association is raffling off a 2014 Chevy Volt, and only 3,000 tickets will be sold. So how do you win? Go to illinoisolar.org and click on the link to the Chevy Volt raffle. You can buy one ticket for $40, two tickets for $60, or four tickets for $100. All raffle proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout the state of Illinois. The winner will be drawn at the ISEA member meeting on December 7th, 2013. Again, that's illinoisolar.org to buy your tickets and to get all the small print details.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Hey, George. George Janowick. We're trying to get a hold of you. Oh, he picked up. All right, there he is. Okay, we'll be with you in 60 seconds. I'm glad he's there, finally. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. If you ever doubt the value of trees, you need to visit a website called treesaregood.com. Among the things you discover there is how trees alter the environment in which we live by moderating climate, improving air quality, reducing stormwater runoff, and harboring wildlife. Local climates are moderated from extreme sun, wind, and rain. Radiant energy from the sun is absorbed or deflected by leaves on deciduous trees in the summer, and it's filtered by branches of deciduous trees in winter. So there, more of that energy gets through and warms your house. By using trees in cities, we can moderate the heat island effect caused by pavement and buildings in commercial areas. Wind speed and direction is affected by trees. I bet you didn't think about that. Of course, farmers do when they do windbreaks out in the country. Rainfall, sleet, and hail are absorbed or slowed by trees, providing some protection for people, pets, and buildings. Trees intercept water, store some of it, and reduce storm water runoff. And that's just some of what trees can do. Contact a certified arborist at the Care of Trees. Call 800-508-9466 for a free, and I mean free, consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
I was blinded by the devil, born already ruined. Stone cold dead as I stepped out of the womb. By his grace I have been touched, by his word I have been healed. By his hand I've been delivered, by his spirit I've been sealed. I've been saved. By the blood of
the Lamb. You know, the idea of Dylan doing a revival song is, I don't know, kind of interesting to me. It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's go to the phones and bring in George Janowick. George, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Mike.
Where are you?
Well, we're at Bankston's Pumpkin Farm in Homer Glen.
And getting ready for the big weigh-off.
The big weigh-off is going to happen at some point today. We're getting ready. We're unloading pumpkins. We got about 25 pumpkins lined up over here.
Are you scouting? Are you seeing who's going to come up with the big prize today?
The big prize, yeah. There's definitely two that are going to go head-to-head later on today. We got Jeff Shinoa from Joliet, and then we have a longtime grower from Ohio who showed up with a real monster. So it's going to be neck and neck here.
So you let people come in from out of state, huh, to do this?
That's right. Yeah, it's an open competition. So,
and I know that in the past you've had some out of staters who have won, but nothing's going to approach the world champ that they had last year, over 2,000 pounds, right?
Unless something goes extremely heavy. You never know once you get a pumpkin this size if they're going to go that big. But we're looking at probably two pumpkins that will hover around 1,500 pounds plus. So, it's still a heck of a pumpkin.
Yeah. I mean, 1,500 pounds, I mean, how do you even move that? You got to move those really carefully, don't you?
Very carefully, and you have to have a good plan and a lot of people and, some heavy machinery. You know, a lot of these trucks are pumpkins have been moved with forklifts or something similar even out of the pumpkin patch.
Yeah.
Get them onto the truck to get them here.
Now, you said that for you, actually, the pumpkin season was actually pretty good, but just not for you this year, right?
Yeah, I got some issues with some disease in my soil, so, my pumpkins didn't do as well as I'd like. So my pumpkins are probably around 600 pounds. So, for some people, that's still a big pumpkin, but in the competitive world, it's really nothing. So
well,
I brought them anyway.
Mr. Brown Thumb was on the show earlier in the day, and he's had this, he's always wanted to grow giant pumpkins. And what I think we got to do is get him some giant pumpkin seeds to get him started on that, okay?
Absolutely. Yeah, we can set them up.
And he also made a suggestion that if we can get some of those, and I know you can get your hands on them, you've given me some before, we could get some of my listeners to grow their own giant pumpkins next year. Now, they're not going to get to 1,500 pounds, but we could actually have a competition for this radio show.
Well, that would be extremely fun because they could bring their pumpkin here and get it weighed. And, you know, for the average person, you know, you're going to end up without little or no effort with a 200-pound pumpkin, and that's bigger than anything you're going to get at any nursery or garden center right now.
That's true. I mean, and it would just be awesome. So I think you and I are going to talk about this. All right. We're going to set up something for next year. Meanwhile, the big pumpkin way off is at Bengston's Pumpkin Farm. It's 13341 West 151st Street in Homer Glen. Stop by around noon. You're going to get going, and it's going to be a lot of fun, isn't it?
It's a lot of fun every year. We've been doing this for 20 years, and every year it just seems to be getting better.
All right. I'll talk to you. Give me a report, and we'll talk soon. Take care.
All right. Great, Mike.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Got to go. Go green. Or are you ready for me, Carol?
I am. Go home.
You bet.